Meeting to order for the January 4th, 2016 Public Finance Advisory Committee meeting. Roll call, shall we start with my right?
And Chair Hughes, if I may interrupt for just a moment.
Sure.
I just want to test, I believe that we have Paul Angelo from Siegel, the actuary to the Orange County Employee Retirement System. So I just want to confirm, Paul Angelo, are you there on the line?
Yes, I am.
Very good. So welcome to the meeting, to the Public Financing Advisory Committee. So with that, I'll turn it back over to Chair Hughes.
All right. With that, I'd like to call roll call, please, starting from my right.
Frank Kim, County Executive Office.
Eric Woolery, Auditor Controller.
Carl Groner.
Tom Hammond.
Wallace Rodecker.
John Moore.
Sherry Friedenrich, Treasurer.
All right. And I do believe we have a quorum. We want to approve, have a motion for the approval of the meeting minutes of the December 8th meeting. Do I have a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Any discussion, comments, additions, deletions?
Madam Chairman, I have a question. On page 3, in the third paragraph, let's see, 6 lines down, starting with the word return, it says OSERS was comfortable with a 4.5% and would be net and with the savings. I remember you saying that. In the schedules that you sent us, the supplemental data for agenda item number 4, these aren't numbered. But they talk about, let me get the schedule heading. Well, there's no heading on it, but it's 2016 prepay or no prepay dated December 22nd on the bottom. Are you with me on that one?
Yep, I sure am.
Take a look at the discount to the county. It's out there by itself at 5.8%.
That's correct. That was for the 2016 pension prepayment that funded the fiscal year 16-17. So this is the 2017.
Correct. So we're down from 5.8 to 4.5?
That's correct.
Thank you.
We're going to have a lot of discussion on
yes.
this a little later. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, thank you, Chair Hughes. In the minutes under item 6, it does indicate that Member Friedenrich will abstain from voting, but I would like the record to reflect that I also left the dais so that I would not be involved in any discussion relating to the issue at hand, other than from a if there was questions on the purchase. Thank you.
Thank you, Treasurer Friedenrich. We'll make sure that's added so that's clearly reflected.
And with that, I would ask that the maker of the motion amend that for that edit, if that the maker and the second would do that. Thank you.
So amended.
Any further additions, deletions, corrections, comments? Hearing none, I call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes unanimously. We're going to have the elections of the chair, and I'm looking forward to that.
Can I ask, Madam Chair, that I have somewhat of a time constraint. Can I ask that we table that to item number 4 and get straight into the issue that we're here for?
Do I anybody need to make object a motion to of doing that? That? Okay, let's see how our time goes. All right, with that, and then let's call, you call it a study session, but we are revisiting the 2017 annual pension prepayment and financing. And before I call you to the dais, Ms. Lester, you'll be presenting, right?
Yes, Chair Hughes. I will be presenting as well as a couple of other presenters as well.
Okay. Before I do that, I have brought some materials that I think are relevant. You're going to leave the dais. First of all,
yes, I'd like to ask if Chair Hughes, if I could be recused because I have a conflict. We are we have negotiated to purchase the private placement from the county if they were to sell it. Thank you.
All right. If I have an extra copy, you may want this. I'm going to pass to my right and left two items that I think are preliminary to what we're going to be discussing today. One of them is the third amended and restated County of Orange policies and procedures for PFAC. Does everybody have one of those?
Need one more?
One more. Ms. Friedenreich, would you like one?
Sure, I do have the policies here.
And I also have the minutes from the last time, or the agenda item for the last time that we voted on these pension obligation bonds. I do want to bring certain items to everybody's attention so that when we are listening to the presentation, we can filter the information more efficiently. I would ask you to look at the PFAC policies and procedures, number one, and this is our purpose. These are our rules. This is the bylaws by which we operate.
Madam Chairman, just to clarify, that's dated May 19th, 2009 on the lower right-hand corner.
That's what I was given.
Thank you.
And that they are, Ms. Daffrey, those are the current policies?
Yes, they are.
All right. May the record reflect that I have handed out the current policies and procedures. Item number one that we are to do is to assure that all public financings involving the County of Orange are in compliance with all applicable state and federal laws. That is our first purpose. I will also invite your attention to page 4 of said policies and procedures. At the top, item Roman numeral 3, no public financings for purpose of arbitrage. No public financing, the proceeds of which shall be used primarily for the purpose of investment for arbitrage, shall be approved by the committee. And that is another one of our policies that we must follow. Now, there are other things that we should be very familiar with, but I thought that that would be advantageous. Before we bring forward revisiting the current POB request, I want to walk us back through history because I was chair at the time. And by the way, I looked at the minutes which follow our unanimous vote. You have before you the meeting of December 11th, 2014, that we issued the short-term taxable pension obligation bonds not to exceed $365 million. That was, may I inquire, Ms. Lester, that was our last time?
Chair Hughes, the last time we issued the pension bonds was January of 2016.
January of 2016.
That's correct.
This was the January 2015?
The one that you're referring to?
All right, then I brought the wrong one.
The county has issued these pension bonds for the purpose of receiving a discount for the prepayment every consecutive year since January 2011.
All right, well, we can talk it through. I have the 14 here as well. If I were looking at the meeting in December of 15, where we voted for the pension obligation bond, the amount of the discount request was presented was around $17 million. You have those minutes?
I do not have those minutes with me.
But it was a similar amount, was it not?
If you wouldn't mind repeating that amount.
What was the offered discount that we were going to receive in 15?
5.8%. Which was a prepayment discount of $21,058,343.
Can you give me that number again? 21
million.
058,343. Okay. And that was what we were going to save, right?
That was the prepayment discount. That was the gross discount.
Okay. Now would you please tell us what the actual loss was?
The
$8,900,000.
The actual loss, I can't say what the actual loss was, but you all received a comparative spreadsheet where we did a like comparison using the monthly OSERS rate of return. We don't have access to the actual deployment of the assets to different asset classes or the rates, but we use this spreadsheet to do a like comparison of prepay or no prepay over the last 6 years to determine if this has been a beneficial program to the county.
May I ask you to answer the question? I spoke with you earlier today and asked you to confirm at the last pension obligation bond we issued, there was a loss of $8,895,334. Is that correct?
According to the estimated comparison worksheet.
Okay. Then the next, so we were told it'd be $21 million as a savings. It was a loss of $8,895,000, and I let you know I'm going to be asking how that loss is absorbed and where it's going to be booked. I want to ask you the next question. You had provided schedules starting in 2012, which showed in certain years that there was a net benefit. Is that correct?
Correct.
But I ask you to go back to 2011. How much was the loss that year?
According to the estimated comparison spreadsheet, $4,231,979.
And that was for 2011?
Correct. So that was the OSER's earnings less the prepayment, gross prepayment discount.
All right. Do you recall in 2011, do you have the minutes there as to what the board or the committee was told that the net savings would be?
Chair Hughes, I do not have the minutes of the 2011 meeting with me.
Okay. We would assume that it'd be a similar scenario to the 2015 where we were told $21 million and it turned out to be a $9 million loss, right?
And I would just say that when we are providing and presenting, we are providing estimates because we have not gone to market at that point.
Don't take my comments as being personally critical. Our task is to make sure that these financings are vetted. And I do think it's relevant that we talk about the very last one we did. We were told that we would have $21 million savings, and it turned out to be almost $30 million swing because it was a net loss. So it's not a personal affront. This is our job.
And Chair Hughes, I don't take it personally, but just trying to make sure that the complete, clear picture is presented.
Okay. Before we call for the presentation, I do have one question that I wasn't able to get the answer to, and I'm not being critical because it's a lengthy question.
Understood.
Let's take 2015, for example, with our $9 million loss. How does that get absorbed? Does that get added to the pension obligation, or do we have to write a check? How does it get absorbed?
Through the chair, any market loss, in addition to a number of factors, gains or losses, it is applied to the unfunded liability, positive or negative.
So it increased by almost $9 million, our unfunded liability?
I wouldn't say that because I don't have specific knowledge with me of the specific other factors that affected that.
May I inquire of our auditor, controller? Do you know what the what happened to it, the $9 million?
Which liability, though?
Counties.
Well, the $9 million lost is not there to be earned as future earnings on the assets of the plan. So it's a loss that gets tacked on. And she's correct in that there's many factors in the calculation of that liability. This being one of them is the rate of return.
And Chair Hughes.
I have never seen any breakdown of that, which I think is kind of a weakness. I'd like to see kind of the component breakdowns of, what is, future, what has to do with the longevity of life, what has to do with, payroll increases, what has to do with the return on investment. I think those components are very key to making certain decisions like this one.
Mr. Kim, you look like you're going to add something to that question. You just look like you were going to. All right.
And Chair Hughes, I think that's a perfect opportunity. It's a question that I believe that Steve Delaney, the CEO of Osers that we have here today, and Paul Angelo, the actuary, would be able to shed some light on that.
Why don't we call them up? Because, and I will add the specific question. I've been asked this by several people over the last few days. Osers tells us that we're going to get a discount of 4.5. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Do you guarantee that?
We do not guarantee.
Okay. So if we don't get
we guarantee the discount. Whether we earn the amount is a difference. But we guarantee that you do not have to pay initially that 4.5.
Oh, initially.
Right.
But if it doesn't earn it, we're correct. $9 million under.
If that's the outcome. And for the record, again, Steve Delaney, CEO for Orange County Retirement.
Okay, so that was the question. So when the question had been asked, are we guaranteed the 4.5? The answer is absolutely not. And in fact, last year we would lose $9 million. Give us your comments, I would also like to have you answer the following question. It appears that the county then, the Board of Supervisors, takes the risk of the loss. What happens to the money? You get to use it, right?
Correct.
So if there's a gain, we all gain, right?
That is correct.
But if there's a loss, we have to pay for it.
Correct. It goes to the unfunded liability.
Okay. So we take the risk, you get the benefit. Want to tell us why we should do this?
Well, OSERS won't tell you to do this. OSERS is neutral to this. It is a program that we provide that the employers can choose to take advantages or not. I'm going to go to my slides here and get us started, and I'll ask, again, you have on the line Paul Angelo, who is our actuary. Paul, what I'll ask is, you've got the presentation. Feel free just to speak up, because I can't see you there. Speak up at any point where you feel you have something relevant to assist the committee.
Oh, hold on, Mr. Kim has a question.
If I'm able, can I make one comment on that? So when we do the pension prepayment and we receive the 4.5% discount, absent a pension prepayment, we're still making contributions to OSERS over 26 pay periods in a year, and our expectation is that we're going to earn 7.25. So whether we do the prepayment or not, there's still an expectation that whatever money is transmitted to OSERS during the calendar year, that it's invested and it's earning whatever the assumption is. In terms of the prepayment, it's 4.5%. In terms of if you made it over 26 pay periods, we assume that we're going to earn 7.25.
No guarantee.
There's not a guarantee, but that is the system. So all I want to clarify for the record is that regardless of how the money is transmitted to OSERS, if you do a prepayment, you need to earn 4.5%. Well, that's the assumption. If you don't do a prepayment, we assume that we're going to earn 7.25. And at any time, the actuaries can correct me, but any time that we don't achieve those milestones, whatever that underrun or overrun is, it's reflected in the overall asset value. And as they do their annual calculation and valuations, it's reflected in the forthcoming rates the following year.
And I ask that question, Mr. Kim, and I'll do, with all fairness to staff, those questions have been asked in the last few days. It was the end of the year. And I don't have an answer that we can all share as to what the net difference is if we don't do this versus we do.
It's right here.
No.
That's what this is.
I don't believe so. But go ahead. Maybe.
Would you like my comments?
Yes.
Well, I kind of, if I understand the spreadsheets that we've all been given here, and if you look at what OSERS...
Mr. Hammond, which one? The one in our package?
The last one right here. Yes.
In our package?
Yes.
It's right here.
Yep. It's called Comparative Benefit, 18-month discounted, with a discount and without a discount.
This was provided to us as we came in.
We got it.
That's why I asked. He's looking at the one in the package that came in our package.
This came at home. Okay. This is home.
And what page is it, Tom?
And that's correct. Just to clarify, it was sent with your package and also electronically, but we also provided extra copies.
It's identical?
Yes.
But, I mean, what I'm looking at, sir, and please correct me if I'm misunderstanding here, but if you take the 5.5-year period of this enterprise.
And if I, Tom, if I could just interrupt, Steve has never seen this spreadsheet, and it's not OSER's methodology. It was just the county's method of comparing whether the prepayment was reasonable or not. So I'm not sure that...
I leave it to you to comment on it, correct?
Steve would be able to answer specific questions.
What I was hoping, let him present, and then we'll go through this, because he did...
I do plan to go through it.
You made a comment that's wrong, I think.
Okay.
I think. I believe it's wrong. But what I'm looking at here is that there's a 5.5-year enterprise that we've been doing this. And if you go to the total, if we did the discount, and if you look at the total money to OSERS, it's $2,060,000,000, okay? If we didn't do it, it's $2 million, OSERS would make $2,083,000, which is a $23 million difference. In other words, OSERS is better off not doing this deal with us by 23, but the $23 million is only 1% of the whole thing. I mean, it's within a margin of error of 1% over 5.5 years. So when you say...
Tom, I'm sorry. I can't follow you. Yeah. What page are you
I'm
on?
Not sure we're on the same page.
That's what I'm trying to ask you.
You're saying $23 million?
Now look where it says total to OSERS.
No, give me a heading. I don't know the page. I'm looking at the...
Are we looking at this?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, see where it's yellow? It says assumes POB issued. Go to the right-hand side, and it says the total to OSERS.
Starts at $380 million?
$391.
Whoa. Not on this one.
But mine isn't yellow.
Well, it's yellow at the top. It says 380-172-276.
Yeah, and ours is 380-172.
There's two totals to OSERS. There is...
You said the far right.
Assume, and I'm just trying to clarify here so you can follow, is there's two, there's one that says assumes POBs issued, total to OSERS, A plus B, 391,787. So that's comparing total to OSERS, assuming POBs issued. Far right is total to OSERS, assuming no prepayment.
Yeah, and if you add, well, there's no total there. If you added it up over 5.5 years, it's within 1%. So the 5.5-year window is, I think, a better picture of looking at the $9 million. It's not that somebody's absorbing the $9 million. It's the issue of how does OSERS come out, and how does the county come out by doing this program? And it come out almost even. I mean, that's what these numbers add up to. So, I mean, there's no loss to OSERS, and there's a gain to the county. And the reason that there's a gain to the county is because it's a simple concept of present value. Our treasurer, for mechanical reasons or structural reasons, can't make more than 1% on the money. OSERS can make 4.5% or 7%, whatever you project. And you may call it an arbitrage, but it's a good arbitrage. So I think that you have to. So you're going to have bad years. 2 out of 5 years, or 2 out of 6 years, and that's probably always going to continue. But the county's better off, and OSERS is the same, according to this analysis.
What do you mean by a good arbitrage?
Well, it's a positive arbitrage.
Oh.
And if I can just clarify, it's not the county's arbitrage. The county issues the pension bonds to take advantage of the discount offered. It's a budget discount that allows the county to have savings in the upcoming budget.
Isn't that an arbitrage?
If Mrs. Friedenrich could make 4.5% on her money, I'd say don't do this. But she can't, simply because that's the way the structure of the county works. You can. And the discount is favorable to the county. And it comes out almost the same to you.
And if I might, let me read just one line from a letter that Siegel provided to OSERS and plan sponsors back in July of 2013 when the board was looking at the program, to this issue of, well, what is it that's actually occurring with regard to the interest? So this is, Paul, this is a July 10th, 2013 letter. You probably don't immediately have it in front of you, but I'm reading from that. He explains how they add interest to account for the fact that the time value of money is there as the contributions are coming in. And he says here in this third paragraph, this is Franz Siegel's letterhead, that is why if the employer were to make its contributions at the beginning of the fiscal year, it would usually be thought appropriate to remove the interest adjustment currently calculated at 7.25% per year that is built into our contribution rates. In other words, we are not so much giving an interest credit for early payment as we are removing the interest charge for paying after the beginning of the year.
That's correct. That's present value. That's the definition of present value.
Well, we have some other issues that we need to talk about with this. I'd like you to, you have a presentation.
It may be redundant from some of the things that I have on this presentation. So
let's hear your presentation.
Okay, we'll just go briefly through this because, again, you're very much aware of this program, I can tell, by listening to the discussions. This is just an agenda of the items that we'd be discussing. The prepayment program itself, the first bullet is that it really is a management tool for plan sponsors. To my point, it is something that OSERS is neutral to. We're not pushing the program or knocking the program. It's a program that's a tool that's been provided through statute by the legislature that we've made available. Paul, you're there. The first two bullets are what you actually, the second two bullets are what you actually do. Could you just speak to us in the next two on the annual contributions and the lump sum prepayment?
Sure. This is Paul Angelo, the CEO of Consulting. We produce the actuarial evaluation, and all of our numbers are one form or another of a present value, which means that the value depends on the timing when the cash flow will take place. And so when we calculate the contribution rate, so this is, Steve, are we on slide 3?
Correct.
January 7th.
Okay. On the second bullet, when we calculate the contribution rates, we need to know when the contributions are going to be made so we can include the appropriate amount of interest. And so for our county retirement system clients, since the contributions are generally made biweekly during the year, that's the timing that we assume when we're determining how much needs to be paid. So we are, in effect, assuming that the contributions will earn interest from each of those biweekly contribution dates. And I'll even tell you a little simplifier. We basically then assume that on average, the contributions will be made in the middle of the fiscal year. And so we do our interest calculation as though the contribution was being paid in the middle of the year, which for us is the same as it be paying biweekly during the year. But those rates that are in our actuarial report have built into them an accrual of interest up to the date that the payments are assumed to be made, in this case, every 2 weeks during the year. So if an employer, under the statute that's on the next slide, if an employer is going to make the payment at some time other than during the year, then we make an interest adjustment. If they are going to make it earlier than on the average during the year, then we will basically give them an interest credit. As Steve said from our letter, it's as though we're backing out the interest that we had charged them. That's exactly the same, though, as saying that we're assuming the fund is going to earn interest from the date the payments are now going to be made to the dates when we originally thought they'd be made. So we're adding and we're really taking out the interest that we expect to earn, in this case, from January 1 to, on the average, the middle of the fiscal year following, from July 1 to the next June.
Isn't it a January 17th date that we pay the actual money?
That's the due date.
I believe that's the case.
That is the date the OSERS board has set, correct?
Right. So it wouldn't be from the 1st, wouldn't it be from the 17th?
That's correct.
That is correct. Then the last bullet is on the discount rate. We'll go into a little more detail that in a moment. It is set by the board. The board revisits this every year to determine, as you heard earlier, it was 5.8. It's been 7.25 in the past. 4.5 is what they're offering at this point. The next slide is one that, Chair Hughes, you got us to really focus on this today, the legal authority. In talking to our counsel, we're being very clear here that the board has broad authority under the Constitution to be able to offer whatever programs it feels is beneficial to the plan and to its, and its sponsors. There is a specific statute, which Chair Hughes had asked about, in 31583, that talks about a prepayment program. And OSERS has patterned what we're offering today after that statute, but we are not being driven by that statute.
That's a problem, and we're going to talk about
okay,
that.
Okay, absolutely. But let me, so let me give you OSERS' viewpoint on
before
this.
Before we go there so that we can catch up, obviously with the limitations of being a public board, I need to catch everybody
absolutely.
Up on what we're doing. In revisiting the PFAC bylaws and understanding that we are to assure that all of the laws are being complied with, and I am a lawyer as well as a CPA, I think it's incumbent to look at it. And I don't believe it's sufficient. In fact, I've talked to several experts, our former treasurer as well, to say, well, I've relied on ORIC or any other fine law firm, no disparagement to ORIC, but we have to do independent thought and analysis. So it is Government Code Section 31582 subsection B, which is a lot of numbers for a very short statute. And I'd like this in the minutes because we're going to have to consider this. Provides, quote, well, provides that a county may, quote, make an advance payment of all or part of the county's estimated annual contribution to the retirement fund, provided that the payment is made within 30 days after the commencement of the county's fiscal year, end quote. And the problem is the word within, our fiscal year end being what, Ms. Lester, June 30th?
June 30th, correct.
So within 30 days, as you might read a code section, could be within 30 days after, 30 days before. So if the code section says we must make this payment within 30 days, and having read gazillions of code section, that's a legal term, that we take it literally, having researched it and found no authority otherwise, it appeared we have a problem. I then did some further research by talking to our former treasurer, now Senator Morlock, who was very involved in setting up this program, and in fact, he sent me to one of the advisors that had worked on it, and in discussing this. Now I'm going to paraphrase. Oops, how did we miss that? I will be happy to carry emergency legislation in order to fix this problem. If it's emergency legislation, we might be able to do it within 30 days. That was his comment to me when I brought forward this. And I am paraphrasing the oops part about it. He said that these programs can make fiscal sense. And in fact, that's why he worked so diligently to do it. He did also comment on the irony that his appointee to this board is the one who was questioning the code section that allowed him to do it. But as I stated, and I said, I still have the obligation to make sure that we comply with all laws. And do you feel that my relying upon counsel without independent obligation, without independent investigation, meets my responsibilities? And he said, absolutely not. So we have a problem. Now, counsel has come back before we get to your issue, because it, it's a greater issue, the other boards. There's ways we can fix this. I'm not trying to say this isn't shouldn't be done in all circumstances. There's several ways to fix it. Council came back, and I asked County Council, and she was very gracious to provide me the, what do we call it, the validation proceeding in 2007. And back up, that's when Morlock and everybody was trying to get this through. There was a validation proceeding brought on that 2007 pension obligation bond. And everyone was told, because I've talked to a couple of staff members from the various supervisor's office, one, my supervisor, and they were told that this has been approved by a court and this is a validation of this financing. Well, I have all of the pleadings in front of me that were presented. That code section, and if I may, I will just show, I didn't make copies, is referred to in a footnote. It's a footnote on page 13 of the request for the default hearing. It states an opinion that the government code section provision operates as a limitation on how long after the beginning of the fiscal year county payment may qualify as an advance payment of its annual contribution, not as a limitation on how long before the fiscal year that advance payment can be made. That was merely the opinion of the lawyer signing the declaration, Michael Weed, who I'm sure is an outstanding lawyer, in a footnote that this code section doesn't apply. Now, the court issues a default judgment. The default judgment had no opposition. It had no vetting. It doesn't go into these questions and, in fact, wasn't presented as an issue to be litigated. It's a footnote. Therefore, not having been found by a court by exhaustive receipt of evidence and discussion, et cetera, it's a default proceeding, not having been reviewed by a higher court, not having had any vetting other than the footnote and the default judgment being entered, I think we still have a problem. Now, the argument that we were told, and I'm bringing everybody up to speed, is that because of the validation finding and the court, I have the judgment here, says, and the county requested that future obligations would come under this validation proceeding. The problem with that is if you're going to claim that it affects future participants, the same facts that are presented in the validation proceeding have to be there. So to have somebody say that because we validated the 2007 and any future issuances is ludicrous, in my opinion. Now, I may be wrong, and I'm sure fine lawyers are going to stand up and say there will never be a potential of litigation because we brought this default validation and we can issue future instruments. And by the way, in that complaint, they give a return, the 7.5 or whatever it was, 7.2. They told the court, we're going to make all this money. Well, last year we didn't. And I will be asking counsel, because in the debentures, in the trust agreements, there is an indemnity provision for the county. You see, the county, under the validation proceeding, submitted to the court a promise. Under the Section 301, issuance of additional bonds, which is where I went through to immediately because that's the issue, does this apply? It requires, at Section 302, an opinion of counsel to the effect that the county has executed and delivered the supplemental trust agreement, et cetera, that such additional bonds are valid and binding obligations of the county. Well, that's great, except at Section 506, prosecution and defense of suits. The county will defend against every suit, action, or proceeding at any time brought against the trustee upon any claim to the extent involving the failure of the county to fulfill its obligations hereunder, and goes on to give other requirements. My question is, and I think I already know the answer, how many potential defendants would you have out there should there be a default on the pension? How many, it was the class of litigants, would they be the taxpayers? Would they be the members of the pension plans? Would it be OSERS? Would it be other individuals? Because whoever it is, we're going to have to defend. That means we circle back to making sure that is the oversight body that we are following all of the laws. And I know you're going to, because we brought it to your attention, and I think it's more than clever, it's a good idea to try and sidestep, because this sidestepped the problem from the OSER's perception, because we've done it with other agencies. The question was asked of Morlock, why hasn't anybody brought this up? Well, because we didn't look at it that way. And when we started digging down, sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees. Now, you were about to say, now that we're all caught, anybody have any questions before he talks about it? you were about to say, with reference to that government code provision, how do we get around it?
Right.
Or do we?
To the issue of how the county makes payment, we can't speak. That is your issue. Absolutely.
Then I'm going to need Oric to
talk
to
us. We're talking here to what is the legal authority that OSERS uses to provide this particular program that's in front of you, this discount.
But that's not our responsibility.
Exactly. So we can only speak to ours. Our legal authority are these. The board can indeed, under its constitutional authority, provide this discount. It has. We did not consider that this 31582 is directive to us, and our council looking at it says, you know, since it begins with the Board of Supervisors may authorize, sees it as descriptive rather than proscriptive, being one of many opportunities or options that can be used. But it's to the county.
It's
not
to
OSERS. Right. So we can't speak to that. We can say that the program we have in front of you, offering this if you take advantage of making the payment in January as the OSERS board is providing, based on the authority that we have under the Constitution, we can provide you this one-year discount. How you get there is a different question.
But not guaranteed.
Not guaranteed. We don't have guarantees.
That is interesting that you came back with that comment, because I thought I was very clear that my questions went towards to the Board of Supervisors, and if we approve or disapprove of this, what their authority is, it limited under this code section at all.
We were posed a question, did OSERS believe we can't opine on what the authority of the Board of Supervisors
could. I'd stay out of this one. Yeah. Any further questions at this time before we get to further comments?
I think we should hear from Oric.
Yeah. Who's the Oric representative?
Chair Hughes and members of the committee, I'd like to invite Phil Morgan of Oric, Harrington, and Sutcliffe Bond Council.
Good afternoon, Chair Hughes, members of the committee, and Phil Morgan with Oric. Chair Hughes, we read the statute differently, and we pointed that out, obviously, to the court in our points and authorities.
You did.
When we were validating the bond issue. It describes a situation where a prepayment is made in the fiscal year for the normal contribution, so that if the county wants to make a prepayment for, let's say, the 17-18 fiscal year and make it in the 17-18 fiscal year, it needs to make the prepayment in July. It can't make the prepayment later than that. Mm-hmm. The statute simply doesn't address the situation of prepaying in advance of the fiscal year. And that's what we pointed out to the court. What I would like to emphasize is that the court entered a default judgment. As you know from the validation statutes, there are fairly elaborate procedures for obtaining a validation judgment. They are very rarely challenged. The fact that it was uncontested is not at all unusual. The court was certainly aware of this statute. Also, in the pleadings, if you'll look at the description of the debentures, we, in at least several places, as well as the county resolution, we mentioned the debenture will evidence the normal annual contribution for either the fiscal year in which it's issued or the next succeeding fiscal year. That means a prepayment before the fiscal year. So all of this was in front of the court. And I can read the judgment. I'd rather not. It's rather lengthy. But the court ends up finding and determining that the bonds, additional bonds, and by the way, additional bonds were authorized in that original resolution of the Board of Supervisors. They authorized the 2007 bonds and additional bonds. And under the statute, once those are authorized, those additional bonds are in existence for purposes of the validation action. Court, so the Board of Supervisors authorized the 2007 bonds, additional bonds, debentures, additional debentures, the trust agreement, supplemental trust agreements, and the court found that all of those agreements are legal, valid, and binding. The time to challenge then that determination, that judgment, was within 30 days. So the appeal period is very quick. And that's the policy of the state legislature, of course, because you need certainty in doing bond offerings.
There was no opposition at the hearing?
No. No,
so there was
not that I recall.
There was nothing for the judge to look at or consider.
Points and authorities.
Okay, and we can describe for the members of the audience here exactly what are points and authorities. They're not evidence, are they? Counsel, are points and authorities evidence under the law? I've done this 40 years. Yes or no?
No, they
They are not.
Right.
Okay, so what was submitted was a very well-written points and authorities with a footnote referring to the section. Mm-hmm. Yes, all of the documents were there, and the point means, in lay language, argument. So it's argument and authorities for your position. They are not evidence before the court, and in fact, we have a plethora of case law which says that counsel's comments are not evidence. So what the court had before it was the 2007 debentures, a complaint, which I have in front of me, which is very brief. It's right here. The reason the book is so thick is because all the exhibits are those proposed. And what you pled for is very brief as well. You're asking the court for findings that we advertise this correctly. The Orange County Register, I'm sure we all go through the Orange County Register legal notices to see what we can find in that. You also asked for a finding that there was no opposition filed. Do you know what it would have cost a citizen to bring an opposition to this, to fight with ORIC and the county with reference to that, and the fact that these are validation proceedings are not opposed? You asked for that the 2007 Series A bonds be approved, and they were. And then you asked for, are any future bonds? Well, we got a problem with that. Let's assume that we have a problem, and I'm not suggesting there should be, because I want to get to resolution, how you can fix this problem. If a citizen were to say, well, you know what, the 2007 bond said this, and in 2017, this is what the contracts are, or this is what the state of facts are. And by the way, we may have a volatile economy coming up. We have a new president. We may be fighting with China, and we've got other things that are going on with trade wars. We don't know exactly what's going to happen. And so if there were a litigant, of which we've agreed as a county that we would have to indemnify, we would be looking for the four corners of the document to see what the court ruled upon. And you're going to find they're not on the four corners. Now, is it a good argument? It might hold up. But I disagree with you that the court has made a finding that that code section does say does not limit it. And I'm going to tell you what my best evidence is. The guy who fought for this said, oops, I will introduce emergency legislation and let's get it fixed. Because nobody caught that. Now, he said he can do it within about 30 days. I spoke to one of the other members of the county who said, why don't we get an attorney general's opinion with reference to it? I also spoke to the former state treasurer with reference to pension obligation bonds. There's a lot of issues with reference to these. You'd want to think that we do this correctly. So one of the suggestions was by a number of people, including now Senator Morlock, would ORIC be willing to put their policy on the line and give us an opinion letter that these bonds, that you'll indemnify if that isn't the case? I don't think you're going to do that. If you are, I'd sure feel much better about it.
If I may?
Yes.
A couple of points, and then I'll give a direct answer to your question. I'd like to go back to the judgment for a moment. This was a default judgment. The appeal period has run. And among other things, the court found the pension obligation is a valid legal and binding obligation of the county upon execution and delivery, the 2007 debenture.
Where were you reading, counsel?
Oh, I am reading from
page?
Page 2 of the judgment.
What line?
9.
Line 9?
Mm-hmm. Now I'm down to 11, 2007
debenture. No, counsel, we do this in court all the time. Let's be accurate. Let's read the entire sentence. Because the court made a finding starting at line 9. The county's pension obligation as defined in the memorandum. Mm-hmm. You skipped that part.
Yeah. As defined in the memorandum is a valid legal and binding obligation upon the county. what I wanted to get to, and upon execution and delivery thereof, the 2007 debenture, and any additional debentures, trust agreement, and a supplemental trust agreement, 2007 Series A bonds, and additional bonds, will be valid, legal, and binding obligations of the county. Now, please remember, the additional bonds and additional debentures were in existence, because they had been approved by resolution of the county.
Right.
The validation statute says once they're approved, they are in existence for purposes of the validation action. I want to then turn.
Stop, question, and that's accurate. Was this bond approved at that time?
Additional bonds were approved, and these are additional bonds.
Was this bond approved at that time? You said they were in existence and they were approved.
There were additional bonds
that were approved. Was this one approved?
Yes, it's an additional bond. Now, we go back to the board, and we mentioned that in the pleadings, for a supplemental resolution where you have all the particulars of the additional bonds that are being issued. But yes, the Board of Supervisors, they approved the 2007 bonds and additional bonds under the trust agreement, and that's what these are. The other thing, if you don't mind, I'd like to turn to Section 870 of the Code of Civil Procedure.
Okay.
I'd like to get at what is this default judgment? What's its effectiveness? And I'm not sure that we should read the entire section.
Is that Civil Code Section 870?
Yes, Section 870A, the judgment, if no appeal is taken, or if taken, the judgment is affirmed, shall, notwithstanding any other provision of law, including without limitations, several other sections, thereupon become and thereafter be forever binding and conclusive as to all matters therein adjudicated. I think this issue was adjudicated. It was in the footnote, but please keep going. Or which at that time could have been adjudicated. We didn't have to even bring the statute up because the statute was in existence. It is a matter that could have been adjudicated.
Can you repeat the Civil Code section?
870A. Bond lawyers love this section. And it says, as to all matters or which at that time could have been adjudicated. This could have been adjudicated. And if the committee's feeling or that this really wasn't adjudicated, it didn't have to be. It could have been. The statute was in existence.
I understand that.
Then continuing, against the agency and against all persons, and the judgment shall permanently enjoin the institution by any person of any action or proceeding raising any issue as to which the judgment is binding and conclusive. We give our opinion. We give our customary bond counsel opinion every year on these POBs. We rely on the validation action. And this is very good authority, 870A.
All you're saying is that this judgment, unless someone counters it, is valid and binding. But you're going to tell me, as you stand there, that in 2007, you can go in and enter a default judgment and preclude any legal questions for any future bonds into perpetuity because you had a default validation agreement. Counsel, I want to see an opinion to that because I'm going to put it on the billboard at the courthouse and say, don't even bother, because if that is true, we don't need to be here because nobody can sue us and nobody can come after us. And we don't need to have an indemnity proceeding. Now, the issue of whether it makes economic sense or what happens is not your issue. But understand the validation proceeding. It's covered. You've done your job. You've done it well. But it is still so much of a problem that the gentleman that put it in to get this so they could do the program said, I think we need to fix this. I think I can get it on the governor's desk, hopefully within a month.
Mm-hmm.
So at least two of us.
Mm-hmm. I can't address Mr. Morlock's concerns other than was he aware that this was a footnote, this was in front of the court?
Oh, I absolutely had a discussion as thorough as we would need have.
With respect to your professional liability policy, you said you had an answer for us.
Oh, I was, Chair Hughes asked if we would give our opinion, and we do give an opinion every year. Yeah. That was my answer, that ORIC is giving an opinion, and obviously, if it turns out, we give an opinion the bonds are legal, valid, and binding obligations of the county. And that's what we're in the practice of doing, and we're going to give that opinion.
And the second part of my question was, if it turns out that they aren't, are you paying for it?
Well, we'll be sued. It'll be litigated, I'm sure, if it turns out they're not.
Your position is no. Okay. That was the question I had with reference to the legality of it. Do we have any comments on that from any members of the board? Mr. Kim, have you had the opportunity to look at this code section?
I have, and I've discussed with bond counsel, county counsel, and my staff, and I'm not an attorney, but I rely on bond counsel and attorneys to give us advice. And their advice has been consistent and clear that this is a valid financing, and it's supported by both county counsel and bond counsel, and that's who I rely on.
Mr. Woolery, you're the auditor. You're the one who has to sign to make the payment. What are your comments?
Well, when I brought this up a few months ago, my main argument was the growing pension liability, and it's just recently that this legal issue kind of reared its head. And I guess my question is, looking at the statute saying within 30 days of our fiscal year end, what's that mean to you? Just in the black and white of what that says, because as an accountant, we take things very literally. Mm-hmm. And you know, to me, within 30 days means before or after that date by 30 days. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to figure out why it's now. I understand from an economic point why the limitation is after. You know, getting it in the money into the market earlier is probably a benefit.
Right.
But, you know, it's if you just take the black and white reading of the law, it says within, not by 30 days after the beginning of your.
I think the statute was really addressing the situation of a prepayment of the normal annual contribution for the then current fiscal year. Mm.
And I would agree with that comment. I agree with that intent, and I understand that as intent, but, you know, as what happens in legislation, there's what the intent was and then what actually gets passed and signed by the governor. And here's one that has this within language, which to me creates kind of a window. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it's after the 30 days, I see it's a problem because you don't have the time to make back your discount rate.
Right.
Whereas if you get it in earlier, you have more time to make your discount rate, which is a good thing. So how do we, I guess, get to the point where it's okay to, you know, pay it early?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess several things. One, I don't think it's addressing the early prepayment. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, and I know I'm going back and repeating myself, this was in front of the court. Mm-hmm. There was a footnote. The whole, all of the documents, the whole financing structure of prepaying in January was in front of the court. Mm-hmm. And the court entered a default judgment. There was 30 days to appeal. No one appealed. And there's Section 870 tells us this is.
And I guess then I playing the devil advocate. So we go ahead and approve this one. And it gets out there. And somebody does come and brings a suit because of this issue. You know, how do we justify our actions?
We would say that the suit is too late.
Because you're basing it back on the 2007.
Absolutely.
Now, and I guess, you know, looking at it, there was a, you said it's future bonds too. And, you know, looking at the years, there was a year, like 3 years there, we didn't do the POBs. And since it's not a continuous issuing of bonds, there's a three-year hiatus in there. Does that somehow affect the 2007 judgment that we didn't have any continuing bonds within that time frame?
No, in as much as we had a paragraph in the trust agreement that, I'm going to paraphrase, but it more or less said that even if there aren't bonds outstanding, this trust agreement is going to remain in existence for purposes of this validation and being able to issue additional bonds.
And what do you mean by validation? I'm not understanding that term. Does that mean these POB type bonds that are 18 months?
Yes. These are 18 months. There's a limitation of 3 years, by the way, in the trust agreement. That's the longest the POBs can be issued is 3 years.
So going back to kind of what the chair was saying, So as long as we continue issuing bonds under this trust agreement, we could basically do it in perpetuity?
You can continue to issue bonds. You need to meet the requirements of the trust agreement, one of which is a validity opinion that we give. And that's right. You can continue to rely on this 2007 validation action.
Okay. So essentially, your opinion is based on that what we did in 2007.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And there's no break in the chain when we didn't issue?
There were no bonds outstanding, but it didn't break the chain of being able to rely on the 2007 validation action.
It wouldn't be a new bond in 2010, I assume, is when we issued the next one?
Each year when you issue, they are additional, they're a term of art, additional bonds is defined in the trust agreement. Mm-hmm. And the additional bonds were approved in 2007. The Board of Supervisors by resolution approved the 2007 bonds and additional bonds. And then the validation action, as I was reading in the judgment, the court very clearly found that additional debentures, additional bonds are legal, valid, and binding.
It didn't. Would you read to them where you say the court very clearly found that?
Line 9, the county's pension obligation is defined in the memorandum as a valid legal, page 2 right. of the judgment. Is a valid legal and binding obligation upon the county, and upon execution and delivery thereof, the 2000 debenture and any additional debentures, trust agreement, any supplemental trust agreement, 2007 Series A bonds, and additional bonds will be valid legal and binding obligations of the county.
Referring to the 2007
and
debenture
bonds.
And additional debentures.
Under the 2007?
Yes.
Additional bonds under the trust agreement. And under the trust agreement, every year you issue what's defined as additional bonds. It's an additional series of bonds off a master trust agreement.
The court made a finding, in your opinion, without any of these additional debentures, because nobody questioned it, and believe me, we've got lots of default judgments that I've gotten with, how the heck did we get that, because nobody opposed it.
Right.
In your opinion, will approve anything we issue as long as we refer back to the 2007 debenture. I don't think
so. It's not quite that broad. There's a master trust agreement. There are forms of bonds attached to it. There are provisions for the additional bond. As long as we comply and fit within the documentation that was in front of the court, yes. And I'll just give you an example. Every now and then, people have asked to call these notes. A little better to market notes, apparently, but it's a short-term obligation. It could be called a note, but as staff knows, we resist that. We say no. The trust agreement called these bonds. The Board of Supervisors issued bonds. We're not changing the name because we want to fit within the documents that were presented to the court.
Okay. Well, that brings me to another question, and maybe Ms. Lester can join in. Don't go too far. We had an issue that I might as well throw out there as well, so we've got this well vetted, is back in the days at USC, and any of you UCLA graduates do not boo and hiss, when I studied public financing, and I had a question, I would look to the California Debt Investment Advisory Commission. You will agree that they are an outstanding body?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That they... I only brought one of the two volumes. They issue the pronouncements, which we should be following. Is that correct? We use these as a resource. Right?
Yes, in many ways, it's part of the state treasurer's office.
Right. Absolutely. It's sort of our little book on public financing, and since we have to apply with federal and state statutes, we look to the California Debt Advisory Commission. I'm sure the gentlemen down there are very familiar with it. I had a discussion with Ms. Lester, and we're going to talk about that, is the fact that what we're using the discount for is not to defease, and I want to ask you, Mr. Willery, because I know you had a question on that, is not to defease the pension obligation, but it is to provide, in essence, a revenue source for other items on the budget. And you will recall Ms. Aguirre stating to Mr. Willery last meeting, well, if you don't vote for this, we're going to take three or four of your positions. Not defease the obligation, but to backfill the budget. Now, that may be something you want to do. It might be. But I want to read from the Debt Advisory Commission's page Roman numeral 14. Debt financing through the issuance of bonds should generally not be considered an additional source of revenue. Now, the argument has been, well, this isn't an additional source of revenue. This is a discount, so which we can spread over it. I know that's caused you concern, Mr. Woolery. What are your comments on that?
Just that, you know, to me, the money that is the savings, it gets passed on into our general fund and the other departments within the county. To rely on that on a year-by-year basis, I think, is a little dangerous because I look at it as one-time money as opposed to, you know, ongoing revenues, which you know, whenever you're trying to make sure you don't have a structural deficit, you want to have ongoing revenues and ongoing expenses equal. And this is something because it has to come to this board and get approved, and it's based on market timing, so you may not want to do this every year. To have it built into, you know, any kind of projections or any other kind of ongoing where you're relying on it is a little bit of a risk. That revenue may not be there.
As was the case last year.
The year with 2014, 2015, whenever the loss was done.
Right.
You brought up some good points. You know, the stock market is looking really good right now, and it has since November. But, you know, in two or three months, it could turn. And, you know, the political structure could change, and we could have some issues there.
Mr. Kim, I'd like you to weigh in, but I lost the part of that before you do that. Is I had a discussion with Ms. Luster that, in essence, these are akin to a trans. Remember that discussion?
Correct. They more closely resemble a trans.
And I asked you, I said, but we call them pension obligation bonds. And you said that's really not what they are, and that the name of them is a pension obligation bond, but they're in essence a way of leveling out the financing. Well, we just had counsel tell us that, well, you have to call them pension obligation bonds because you are going back to the 2007 resolution, but we who are looking at this very carefully, they really aren't. This is a way of providing debt revenue to the county. And Mr. Kim, now, you can jump right in there.
There's a couple of points I would like to address. First, we have rates established by OSERS. Those rates are already in existence. Their board has approved the pension rates for our employees. So we have this cost obligation over the next 18 months, whether we issue this debt
or not.
This is really kind of cash flow financing. We could decide to draw money out of our reserves and make this payment without issuing any debt. Now, it would have an impact on our cash balances, there's other issues, but it's possible that we could do that. And in fact, in this financing, you'll recall, we are not issuing debt to cover all agencies. Certain agencies that have their own cash, like Waste Management, Airport, are doing self-financing, essentially. They're drawing out of their existing fund balance to make the payment. So what I want to be very clear on record is these costs are already here. So we have a decision. You can make the payment 18 months in advance and get a discount, or you can just make it over 26 pay periods. So you're kind of at an either or situation. To address Mr. Moore's concern that you're not guaranteed a rate,
right.
You aren't guaranteed anything anyways. The way that OSERS works is they have an assumption of a revenue stream, payment stream from each of their plan sponsors. They have an investment policy where they will invest that into markets, bonds, real estate, et cetera. And they structure their investment strategy to achieve their stated investment return assumption. So whether we pay this over 26 pay periods or we pay it over one lump sum, they may make money with that, they may not. If they don't hit their number, it adds to your future payments through growth in your liability.
We take that money and apply it against our budget. So
we're going to be charged for it regardless. We have an option. It's kind of like if you get a bill related to whatever goods or services that you purchase, and they say if you pay this in advance, we'll get you a discount. It's, right. That's all it is because we're paying it in advance, we get the benefit of a time value of money. What happens to it once OSERS gets it and they invest it, whether you do it over 26 pay periods or you do it over one payment, the risk is still there. There's a slightly greater investment risk because you're investing it over a shorter period of time, but that is reflected in the discount rate, which is why we originally started with 7.25 discount on pension prepayments. It went to 5.8, then it went down to 4.5. So those concerns and that risk is factored in as OSERS decides that policy. In the future, they may decide that they don't even want to offer this, but it's completely up to OSERS. And once it's offered, we have a decision whether we participate or not. The second issue that I'd love to discuss really is that this is essentially like a Tran type of financing, right? One challenge we have with OSERS, and Mr. Delaney will tell you, I've been talking to him about this for 5 years, is they have a different fiscal year than the county, which creates this mismatch, right? Normally, counties in other jurisdictions that regularly participate in pension prepayments issue this cash flow financing as part of their Tran. Mm-hmm. That is a very common type of transaction. Since we don't issue a Tran, we have an option because OSERS has made this program available to participate via this one-time action. And we have made a decision to recommend to the board through PFAC to use this financing mechanism as a short-term cash flow loan to make the advance payment to OSERS. So when we look at this transaction, we know we have a fixed obligation that's due. We've made a decision to pay it in advance, knowing that with the time value of money, OSERS will give us a credit for that. That's really as simple as I can describe the transaction. In terms of a budgetary impact, I don't think that, you know, I can tell you today if we don't do this action, I'm going to take 3 positions out of the auditor controller's budget or not.
That's what your associate said.
That's what she said on the record.
Well, you check the tape.
Well, I can check the tape, but I can very clearly tell you that our board establishes the budget. I simply make recommendations. If the costs are greater than what my estimate is, I need to balance the budget. I'm required by the state of California to present the board with a balanced budget. So if I have slightly greater costs, I'll have to balance the budget either through increased revenues or decreased expenses. How that shakes out, that's the work that we have from March all the way through June. And we'll be working very closely with the board on that. But what I want to assure you is that, look, PFAC is an advisory body, and I think it's doing a wonderful job by the very fact that we're discussing these important issues. The legal issues that are brought forward by Ms. Hughes, the investment risk concerns that I've heard Mr. Woolery articulate, they're all good questions. And when the rubber really hits the road as a CEO, I have to rely on the advice that I'm receiving from county council, bond council, as well as feedback and input from PFAC to make a recommendation to my board. In the past, we've brought these before PFAC. We've brought these forward to our board. They have supported it. In fact, as I look today, and Mr. Delaney can validate this, other plan sponsors have already taken action. So Fire Authority is a member of OSERS. They're doing the pension prepayment. OCTA is. The Transportation Corridor Agency. The Sanitation District. Other cities that are members. So there's 7 or 8, I'm going to estimate, I don't know all of them. There's many, many entities that are making the same payment under the same timing, under the same legal issues that are being brought forward today.
Based on the 2007 finding?
I couldn't tell you what their legal rationale is, but there are other entities that are doing this exact same transaction under the same timing with their attorneys and their bond counsels approving the transaction. So,
is it a Tran or is it a bond offering?
No, it couldn't be a Tran because Trans have other restrictions in terms of timing of issue. So I don't know if Mr. Delaney, you could.
I can show you from last year. Here's who participated last year. It's on your screen there.
But the point that I'm trying to make is that we're not the only entity to look at this issue, but I'm proud of the fact that we've raised questions that weren't raised with other councils or other entities, and that's positive because we're putting those questions into the thought process for the board as they consider this issue. And we've really, and through this process, we've challenged our public finance staff, our county council, and our bond council. And I think we're ending up with a better, more thoughtful, reasoned decision. I don't know how this advisory body will vote today, but what I would encourage you to do is you have to rely on your council. And if you don't believe that you're getting the information you need, you have to push back and get to a point where you're satisfied that they've given you an opinion. You don't have to agree with it, but you have to be satisfied with the fact that they've given you an opinion that they believe is accurate. And it's opinions, as Ms. Hughes knows, it's an opinion. It's not the law. And there aren't court cases out there that will definitively define this issue. So I'm not certain that today we're going to get to the rock bottom and say, here's these five court cases that prove that this is okay. We're never going to get there.
The former treasurer, the gentleman who, by the way, supports this, obviously, he says, I don't know what's gone on recently, but supports this, says it needs to be fixed. I will fix it. The code section says within. It means within.
And I will absolutely reach out to Senator Morlock and make available our bond attorneys,
because we would
love to engage him on this discussion.
He said that he would do that forthwith because he saw the obvious need. The point being is we know that opinions of counsel, and as well-reasoned and as they are, we have innumerable changes in legislation, amendments, additions, and deletions because something didn't get thought about. This one in 2007, it wasn't was it a refunding? What was it? It was
no. It was a pension bond issuance. It was the pension prepayment.
The same thing, but the comment being from several people. Oops, we didn't look at this, and it doesn't say what counsel is saying. Counsel saying, "I'm giving you an opinion." It could be read this way. That's what he said here. I'm giving you an opinion. You could do that. But when I asked him, "Will you put your policy on the line?" He said, "Oh, that'd be a lawsuit, and we would defend." No, I want to hear, I'm going to take that to the bank. I really mean it. And so you've got three options. You get new legislation, which has been offered, and whatever this board does, I'm going to say I recommend you get that done.
And I think that's great advice, but I can't recall any time that I've ever worked with an attorney that said, I guarantee this. It's just not my experience with attorneys.
And I understand. And when you got $400 million at risk, That causes me some concern. And then the second part is it had been recommended by one of the county personnel, we get an emergency opinion from the attorney general. Frankly, I think Morlock could get it through the legislature faster than you can get
an
AG.
But the attorney general is not the law either, is it?
Well, the attorney general can issue an opinion that under this, the attorney general could issue an opinion which would give us a comfort letter in essence, right? They could.
The Attorney General on occasion gives opinions on legal issues. I'm not sure that type of opinion quite fits into this situation. But
it could. The third thing that we could do is ask the question, if it's going to take a month or 60 days to fix this, what happens if we push this down 60 days and make sure we're on solid ground with it? That's an option as well. Or the fourth option is don't do it at all. And so you're weighing the risk and benefits. I brought the issue. I'm not the only one who's brought it. Mr. Woolery has brought the issue as well as to the legality of it. And he's the one who's going to have to wrestle with Mr. Woolery. When you sign that check, you've got to say, I have the opinion that this is a legal and enforceable obligation, as our PFAC rules have said. Now, every member of this board is going to have to vote to their conscience. But we have some other ways of creative resolution. Mr. Woolery, you had some ideas going forward.
Yeah, well, so most of my ideas have to do more with the economics than this legal issue. And I don't know if we're ready to kind of get into the discussion of that or if we even want to get into the discussion.
Oh, just jump in.
if I could add, we have a couple of more presentations, and I think to Mr. Woolery's issues, Michelle Aguirre
is going to address in her presentation, so.
Well, then why don't we?
I just had one other thought. We're talking about the legalities of this. Isn't the treasurer going to buy 100% of this issuance?
That's correct.
Could there be some indemnification there that would kind of take away this issue?
Oh, great. So our county treasurer indemnify the county.
I mean, because in effect, we're suing ourselves, right?
Yeah. No, my concern is not that. My concern
is. But if that gets us passed today, then it gives us time for next year to fix the legislation.
Well, that's an interesting thought.
It's a thought.
And I'm not aware that OSERS has made available a program that has a different payment date other than the January 17th date.
Right, that'd be a question.
January and July. So you have the.
Oh, we could do it in July?
But at a much lower, at half the rate. So here you have program terms.
Oh, we could.
July 15 at a 2.25.
Well, thank you, Mr. Delaney. Yes, we could. Yes.
I'd like to, Mr. the Oreck gentleman.
What was your name again?
I'm Phil Morgan with Oreck.
Mr. Morgan.
On behalf of yourself and Oreck, would you tell us whether you think Mrs. Hughes's issues, discussions, and claims are accurate?
I think
you want to break that down.
Yeah, I think Mrs. Hughes has identified a statute and has read it one way, but where Mrs. Hughes and I disagree, it's been dealt with. It was mentioned, and I'm going to repeat myself, it was mentioned to the court. There is a default judgment that is binding, and we, with that default judgment, the court has passed on this issue. So I'm confused why it's an issue at this point. There is a default judgment. I should read 870 again. Default judgment, and enjoins anyone from challenging the bonds or the debenture. So I'm a little confused what the legal issue is at this point. It's water under the bridge.
If someone is suing us and it said that we relied as counsel, you relied on a footnote and not enough evidence.
I should grab 870 again. It's not only issues that were adjudicated. This section 870 says issues which could have been adjudicated, meaning had we not even mentioned the statute, it was in existence in 2007, that issue could have been adjudicated. And anyone now is barred from raising that issue. That's the default judgment. That's the beauty of 870. It's extremely broad. But that's because of the policies of certainty and bond issuance. It's unusual in the law to have something that broad. But it's there for the public policy of having certainty in the bond markets without certainty on validity. The public entities would be paying higher interest rates. And so, the state legislature knows that.
So the difficulty that we members of PFAC trying to understand the subtleties and the legal issues here have to rely either on your view, I won't call it an opinion, but certainly your view, your strong view, or Mrs. Hughes.
Mm-hmm.
And whichever one is correct, we have to make a choice.
That was quite unfair, Mr. Hammond. And I'm going to have to address that. I understand what you're trying to do with that comment. I am not issuing a legal opinion, and I think, as Mr. Kim appropriately said, we have brought forth an issue with differing opinions. Counsel did not disagree with me. He just said that the reason that we don't have to worry about it is because of the default judgment. He did not say that the code section allows for it. Now, that is a distinction with a difference.
Well, but the issue here.
I'm sorry, but I do think this code section allows for the prepayment. Okay. I want to be on the record.
So the issue.
I think the better reading is that it allows a prepayment. I do not read this as restrictive.
Okay.
Just to be on the record.
It's a better reading, but it could be read the other way.
I think it is a better reading. Yes.
But it is could be read the other way.
So the issue.
Yes?
Absolutely. Okay. It could be read the other way.
So
thank
the issue
you.
Here today is. We're trying to figure out whether we should approve a $400 million financing that has, we've been told by our bond counsel, ORIG, that there are no legal issues, or if they are, they're very remote. And Mrs. Hughes thinks there are legal issues and we should postpone or
not
do whatever
Mrs.
plan
Hughes.
She comes up with. Okay, speak up then.
Mr. Rodecker.
I have got a whole bunch of issues. I just thought, I figured we'd wait till we sum it up.
Why don't you jump in there?
Okay, well, if you don't mind. Number one, I'm a little concerned about the fact that it lost money in 2015. I don't understand how, in one of the best economies we've had in a long time, unless they're using voodoo and astrology, how did it lose money? And how can we reasonably predict that it's going to make money next year? Number two, I don't understand why, if we're using this money from the pension fund, why aren't the proceeds going to the pension fund? Number three, seems an awful lot like arbitrage to me, and we're not allowed to do arbitrage, and we'd be violating one of our own rules by doing that. Number four, we have a legal issue which Senator Morlock is willing to address and acknowledges, and there is at a minimum ambiguity on that. Probably something we should address before we start voting on it. Number five, the default judgment of 07, it addresses some of our concerns, but it's only, even if we all agreed that that isn't the only problem and that that's fine, we still have a whole bunch of other problems with this. We have the 30-day issue as well, which is another a variable on this whole thing. So I see a whole bunch of problems here before we can, with a clear conscience, just say, oh, this is great. And I don't think this is just Chair Yu's opinion. This is my opinion. We just happen to have similar opinions.
Mr. Moore, you've been quiet.
I have been. It's a serious subject. I understand what counsel is saying, but I also know that, you know, we're talking $400 million at this point. And we went back to, was it 2011? What were the numbers for 2010 and 2009 when we had a horrible economy?
Through the chair, Member Moore, we did not issue the pension bonds in 2010 or 9.
So it's impossible to predict.
Yeah, exactly. So
can't imagine it would have been rosy.
No, it'd be awful. There's concern, and we're concerned for the county. I mean, it's not for this committee or for the chairperson or anybody else. We're trying to make sure that whatever actions we take don't come back to the county, and county is indemnifying anybody that comes back.
I guess through the chair, what I can say, Member Moore, is I think the materials that we provided last time, a publication called OSERS by the Numbers, showed that 19 out of the last 30 years, the actual rate of return exceeded the assumed rate of return, which was 7.25%, or previously it was higher, 7.75%.
Didn't OSERS just reduce their earnings recommendation in the last month? They brought it down.
No, that was PERS.
Was it PERS?
I see us as taking a lot of risk here for negligible reward. We are entering a very unusual economy. The next 4 years, I don't know how anybody can accurately predict. And I think that I think this is an unnecessary risk, except for the fact that apparently the money is already spent. Instead of treating this like found money, it's apparently already allocated into the budget.
And it's not. That's not accurate. The board has
Mr. Kim, that's what we were told.
That's what we were
told. That's why we're reacting.
If I could clarify, each year this is evaluated annually. The first step is OSERS votes on and offers the discount. Now, once that happens, and this year it happened in July, that's when the county embarks on their strategic financial plan process, which is taken to the board in December. And so because OSERS offered the discount, the county has participated in the past. That was programmed into the strategic financial plan and approved by the board in December. Now, the budget process for next fiscal year doesn't start until January.
If I may make a comment, I think there is a misunderstanding about what the strategic financial plan is versus what an approved budget is. The financial plan is simply a planning tool where we make a number of assumptions on revenue, on expenses, and we see what the county's financial picture and revenue picture looks like into the future. It's simply a modeling tool. So when you build a model, you put in assumptions. Some assumptions turn out to be accurate. Some assumptions turn out differently. But it's a tool that we do ahead of the budget to help give us kind of a picture as to what we can anticipate. The only budgetary actions that can occur here are when the board adopts the budget, and that happens in June. So none of the things that have been discussed here have been incorporated into the budget. They've been looked at as part of our financial plan for modeling purposes.
Don't you base your budget on that plan?
No, we use it as an early look at what the budget could look like. And then we haven't even sent out our budget instructions to our departments yet. That hasn't even occurred. It'll happen, I think, next week. So we're early in the process. And I feel like there is some significant misunderstanding about what this program is. And that's a concern for me, because I want to make sure that all the members have the information and the facts correct. I'm not understanding why we believe that there's additional risk with a pension prepayment. The risk exists because OSERS has billions and billions of dollars that they're investing today. They have to invest tomorrow. It's in the market. It's in bonds. It's in real estate. Whether we do a $400 million pension prepayment or not, our money is still invested. Whatever risk exists in the financial marketplace exists whether we participate in a prepayment or not. We're still going to make 26 payments to OSERS if our board and PFAC don't support a pension prepayment. We will still do that. And I can't guarantee you that we're going to hit 7.25%. I can't. And in fact, I know that from looking at what's occurred in the market, I've heard people express concerns about, with the transition of the presidency, the state of the market today. There's a lot of different factors. I'm not an investment professional. But what I can absolutely guarantee you is that there's no guarantee in any of this. Us doing a pension prepayment simply gets us a lower bill from OSERS. The rates are already established. We owe the money. Yeah, we owe the money. There's no additional risk. And in fact, if there's any investment risk, it has to do with investing this money that would have been spread out over 18 months over a shorter investment window. And that is factored into the 4.5% discount. That's why they're not giving us a 7.25% discount. I met with Gerard Miller many times, and he's the chief investment officer for OSERS. And he said to me face-to-face, Frank, because we're investing it over a shorter window, we've got to reduce the discount rate. I said, great, I understand that. It's your program. You designed it in a way that is fair to OSERS, because the last thing I want is to be a part of a decision-making process that unnecessarily puts the county at risk. I'm an accountant by trade. I'm very conservative fiscally. We don't have a specific assumption about what will happen here with respect to next year's budget. That's why this action occurs today. Once we figure out what's going to happen here and with the board, then we'll build that into our budgeting documents.
So this is six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Or we could do it in July.
I was going to suggest, if it's just pretty much that way, why don't we just wait a few months, take the 2.5, address the 30-day issue, ask for Senator Morlock's help, and do it right.
Because you lose $7 million.
Because in July, the economics of it don't...
We'll make $7 million.
Well, we don't know that.
Well, we don't know it today, but I want to address the issue, and I very much appreciate you being here, Mr. Kim, and your candor.
I will be at all future PFAC meetings.
Thank you. Your candor and clarification and very much appreciate it, but it is true that Mr. Woolery was charged with, you'll lose 3.5%, 3.5 employees. Also had somebody have the sheriff call me to talk about this issue. And she was told she would lose millions of dollars in her budget if this doesn't pass. I mean, that's the same kind of discussion that we had here. And I will tell you that the bottom line with the sheriff was the same one as the last time when PFAC voted down the radios, where they wanted a 20-year financing for 10-year life on the radios, which he concluded the conversation with, you do what you need to do, and we're going to trust the judgment of the committee. She ended that conversation with the same comment.
That's wonderful, because I can tell you that there are no threats to departments from my office.
Somebody called and said, if this doesn't go through, she loses $5 million, and she did not dream that up.
I can tell you that when we do our strategic financial plan, that is a process that every department participates in. So when we're working on a pension prepayment, we identify for every department, if we do a pension prepayment, what is the delta between what you would normally pay on pension costs and what you would pay with a pension prepayment. She's aware of that number. In fact, you've got Brian White here from the Sheriff's Department. He's their executive in charge of their finance and business operations. And I'm sure that if we brought him to the podium, he would say that he was aware of it because we did the modeling through the financial plan. I can assure you that we are not behind the scenes going to departments and saying, boy, we need you to really lobby this issue because we're going to eliminate positions out of your budget. That is not how I operate, and I need to be very, very clear that, to me, that's a concern for me because that is not how my office operates. That is not how we portray ourselves.
Mr. Kim, it happened on the record here last month, and it happened in a telephone call to me. So I appreciate
what I would
that,
ask is Michelle Aguirre to come to the podium, because if she's being disparaged, I would like her to address the issue directly.
Not being disparaged.
You're not being disparaged. She made the comments.
Good afternoon, Chair Hughes and members of PFAC. My comments were made related to Mr. Woolery's budget, also the sheriff's, the district attorney, was to provide basically to equate the dollar amount to a potential impact of not doing the pension prepayment. It's not that it was not made or commented on as a threat. It was just to provide information so that PFAC had an understanding. So for example, for Mr. Woolery's budget, I believe the dollar amount is $357,000. For the sheriff's department, it was about $5.5 million. So if we don't do the pension prepayment, then the payment, the retirement, cost of retirement to OSERS is an additional $18 million. That means that the sheriff's department has to pay an additional $5.5 million toward the cost of retirement next fiscal year. Mr. Woolery's office would have to pay an additional $357,000 towards the cost of retirement. That means it could have an impact on their budget, because there are other things, because of the cost of retirement, that they may not be able to do. For Mr. Woolery's budget, the majority of the cost associated with his budget is employees. It's salaries and employee benefits. And so what I was simply doing was equating that to the number of positions that it could potentially impact, because the majority of his budget is salaries and employee benefits. So there was no threat. It was just equating it and trying to help PFAC understand what the budget impact could be for departments. We talked about the strategic financial plan a little bit. In the strategic financial plan, Suzanne mentioned, Frank mentioned, we go based on the information that we have at the time from OSERS. And so we incorporated the pension prepayment into our strategic financial plan. So the cost avoidance, that $18 million, was incorporated into the plan. Even with that, we still had a gap between available sources and uses. So it means the department's request, what they said that they need to continue to operate as they are today, and the available revenues, there's a $35 million gap. So this, if we don't have the ability to make the pension prepayment, then add $18 million potentially to that $35 million.
I understand that. And isn't that exactly what I just said? This is money that's already spent.
That would be a great it's not money that's already not? Spent. That was just in the strategic financial plan.
The budget has not been developed. As Frank mentioned, the budget instructions have not gone out to departments yet. They're scheduled to go out this Friday. So if we have a salary and benefit forecast system that automatically calculates all of the salaries and employee benefits, including the cost of retirement for our departments. So this prepayment or not has not been included or not included yet because we've not begun that process yet. That's not finalized the numbers until around the middle of February. So it's not been incorporated into the budget or not. And the budget is not approved until the middle of,
And June, I think the clearest way is you've got a department head right here in Mr. Woolery. His office has not been provided an estimate of what his labor costs are for next year. Mm-hmm. It's not in his planning cycle yet. So it's not been baked in. It's not been assumed. All we use the financial plan for is a modeling exercise of what does it look like next year. Because I'll tell you, when you manage a county of 18,000 employees, if you know that you've got some challenges on your budget, you might do hiring freeze, you might tighten up some discretionary expenses. We use that as an advance look of what could happen and start hedging how we manage fiscally.
I appreciate your explanation, but Ms. Aguirre was sitting in your chair next to Mr. Woolery. She wasn't addressing the PFAC committee. She was addressing Mr. Woolery, who had brought this up and said this could cost you 3.5 employees. It was very, very clear.
Yeah, Mr. Hammond and I have finally agreed on one thing. He'd like to take a 5-minute break, and I think it'd probably be a good idea. Could we take a 10-minute break?
We've got Wallace is trying to catch an airplane.
I've got about 15 minutes.
Okay. Well, let's make a 5-minute break.
5-minute break.
5-minute break. Be back at 3:50. And then we're going to get close to calling. We ought to call a question. Thank you.